Bob and Beth, good to see you. Thank you. Thanks for joining us. Are we ready? Good morning. Lieutenant Governor Reynolds is out of state at a Republican Lieutenant Governors Association meeting, so she couldn't join us this morning. But I'm very pleased to be joined by Major General Tim Orr, who is the Adjutant General of the Iowa National Guard, retired Colonel Robert King, Executive Director of Veterans Affairs, Jason Kemp, who is our new Program Manager for Home Base Iowa. Jason is also a retired Master Sergeant, and I also want you to know that we are pleased to be joined this morning by other veterans, Bob Meyer, who is the co-chair of the Home Base Iowa program and has been very actively involved in this, and Beth Townsend, who is retired from Air Force and is in charge of workforce development for the state. As you know, Wednesday is Veterans Day. I'm proud to say it is a state holiday. I was the governor that signed that law when we restored the state holiday for Veterans Day to the day that has significance and meaning, and that is November 11th. And the history of Veterans Day is the armistice that ended World War I occurred on the 11th day of the 11th month at 11 o'clock in the morning. And so, unfortunately, a lot of our World War I veterans are deceased, probably all of them at this point in time. But when I was commander of the American Legion at Lake Mills, we still had a lot of World War I veterans, and that was a very meaningful day. And I think it's important for us to respect history. We're encouraging all Iowans to take part in events to remember those that have served our country. I mean, and Iowa has a proud history going way back to the Civil War, where we had a higher percentage of our population that went on to serve and help preserve the Union than any other state. So we have a proud tradition and history of service, and we also know that many Iowans and many Americans have made the ultimate sacrifice for the freedoms that we enjoy each and every day in this country. Iowa has led the way in honoring and attracting and recruiting veterans to our state through our comprehensive home-based Iowa program. We're very proud of that. I think there's over 1,500 veterans that have now been placed in jobs. Home-based Iowa is a win-win-win for veterans, for the state of Iowa, and for the businesses and nonprofits and employers that hire them. We're also joined this morning, of course, by many others that care deeply about our veterans, and Jason Kemp will tell you more about the Home Base Iowa program, and I'm glad to say that he's really hit the ground running, he will be telling us about some of the opportunities that there are available for veterans to participate. In fact, the whole crew here will today. I will be participating on Wednesday on Veterans Day with KIOA 93.3 on their Valor Radiothon, which is helping raise money and awareness for American Legion's Iowa Veteran Services and Assistance Programs. All the donations will stay here in Iowa to be used within the American Legion of Iowa to help provide assistance through our service officers and assistance programs for Iowa veterans and their families. I would also say I know that Colonel King oversees the Department of Veterans Affairs, and we have Veterans Affairs directors in every county that provide services, and the benefits that they've been able to assist veterans with has gone up and up in recent years. For the general public that want to donate to this effort, they can go to www.kiowa.com or www.ialegion.org. To donate in person, donations can be accepted at either the First Class Credit Union locations at 303 Euclid Avenue in Des Moines or 2051 Westtown Parkway in West Des Moines. The radiothon will be from 6 a.m. to 6 p.m. at Prairie Meadows, and I will be joining them at 1 p.m. To participate. I'm also proud to say that I'm one of the founding members of the American Legion Foundation that was started by Donald E. Johnson, past American Legion National Commander, also was head of the VA at one time. Senator Johnson is his son, by the way. And that group, I think, now has close to $2 million in an endowment that goes to help veterans and their families and other causes that American Legion supports. Most of all, we're proud that many Iowans recognize how beholden we are to those that have made the sacrifices to serve our country, and many have a friend or a family member who has served in the armed forces. So it's incumbent on all of us to remember and appreciate what veterans have done for us. And we have this special day, Veterans Day, November 11th, as a state holiday. And so we ought to use that not as a vacation day, but as a day to really respect and honor what it's all about, and that is our veterans and the recognition that they deserve. So please take some time to express your appreciation and support for veterans on Veterans Day. So at this time, I want to turn it over to our outstanding Adjutant General. I like to say we have the best state National Guard in the United States of America, and we have the best Adjutant General, Tim Moore.
Thank you, Tim. Governor. Thank you. Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Thanks, Governor, for your kind words. It truly is an honor today to join Governor Branstad and his team to attend a press conference for me to have the opportunity to say thanks to Iowa and to thank all our veterans. You couldn't ask for a more friendlier state than support of our veterans than the state of Iowa. And we've made a lot of accomplishments over the last several years to include Home Base Iowa and other initiatives to show, you know, our support and our caring attitude to our families, to our veterans, and to their children. You know, since September 11, 2001, we've been at war with a variety of factions around the world. And this has been the longest serving war that we've had in our history. And because of that, we're beginning to see a new set of veterans that have been created since September 11th. And in Iowa, we have many of those that have been part of just the Iowa National Guard. We've had over 18,000 soldiers and airmen that have served on active duty since 9/11. And that's really predominantly in Iraq, Afghanistan, Central and Theater of Command, and also Kosovo. Unfortunately, of that National Guard soldiers and airmen that have served, we've lost 24. And so today, like Veterans Day, is a special day for us to have a chance to remember our veterans, those that have served not only now, but have served in the past, and a chance for us to reflect and to say thank you to them and to their families. We also are going to be out this week with our soldiers and our airmen participating in over 40 veterans events throughout the state of Iowa, and we're very proud to be a part of that. We'll be speaking in a variety of organizations, communities, schools, and sharing the message of what Veterans Day is about. We also are honored that the Gold Star Museum on Camp Dodge, which we think is the finest military museum in the country, will be open. It will be open from 10 a.m. till 2 p.m. It's free to the public. We encourage you to come out, bring your children, bring your family members, and capture the history of all veterans. It's not just an Iowa National Guard museum. It's a museum that's dedicated to all veterans, their service, and their families. And admissions is free, and everyone is welcome. Last I would like to leave you with is we're signing on November 10th tomorrow. I'll be participating in what we call the Epic Challenge. And this is an opportunity for us to aggressively recruit new members from diverse populations into the Iowa National Guard. So we're excited about working with the Nexus organization to increase the number of women in the Iowa National Guard, to increase the female leadership in our organization. I'm proud to say that last week the Army has changed its policy, in which allows us now to recruit women into more combat-related positions than we Had our first two female young privates that enlisted into an artillery unit in northwest Iowa, which is the first time in the history of the Iowa National Guard. So, ladies and gentlemen, I thank you for your support of our veterans and their families, and I would now like to turn it over to Colonel King, Veterans Affairs.
Thank you, Tim. Governor Branstad, thank you very much for having us here today, and thanks for the leadership you provide to all of our veterans. I'd like to highlight some of the activities that are going on. But first, I'd say it's a great day to be a veteran. I am one. Iowans through the course of time, and I've watched this as I was migrated through the public affairs officer of the Iowa National Guard for 15 years to now being the director of the Department of Veterans Affairs now for the last 2.5. But Iowans are very, very supportive of our veterans. Actually, in my estimation, the veterans couldn't ask for more, and it's just gotten better and better and better as time has gone on. Iowa's had as the governor said, has had a very, very rich military history, dating clear back to the Iowa territories in the 1830s, and then the war began, and between the states and President Lincoln asked for one regiment of infantry, and we gave him 48 infantry regiments, 9 cavalry regiments, and 9 batteries of artillery, and for a grand total of 76,000 men and boys, and that was 11% of our population at that time. So since then we've been involved in the Spanish-American War, World War I, World War II, Korea, Vietnam, and now as General Orr talked about, the war on terrorism. Our soldiers stand up, they can be counted, they do wonderful things for us, and what they do is they've kept this nation free, they've kept it as it is. We have the rights and freedoms that we do simply because of our veterans, and we can't thank them enough. At the same time, like as those soldiers and sailors, members of the Coast Guard, the Marines, and the Airmen have been away, there was the Iowa citizens that stepped up as they do today, and with the radiothon that the governor talked about, that's one item, and I'm following you on in the next hour after
okay.
that.
But give me your warm-up act.
It's been the other way around. But Iowans continually step up to the plate to help them. And as I said, I've witnessed that. The Iowans understand the sacrifices. They understand what our veterans are doing, and it's very gratifying to watch this happen. On our department website, which is va.iowa.gov, we have posted all of the military / veterans events that we know of in the state of Iowa. We publish it twice a week. But on Veterans Day, we'll do our traditional 8 a.m. Veterans Day service at the Iowa Veterans Cemetery. Congressman Young will be our speaker this year. And if people aren't aware, the cemetery is located right at the Van Meter exit, which is exit 113 going west on Interstate 80. And then, though they're not related with us, we collaborate with McLaren's Chapel frequently. They're having a 9 o'clock service. They're located on Ashworth Road. And then the Polk County Board of Supervisors and the Iowa Event Center are co-sponsoring the annual Veterans Day ceremony there, which begins at 11 o'clock. And Terry Beer, the director of the regional office of the United States Department of Veterans Affairs, will be the our guest speaker there. And going back and thinking about the schedule or our events calendar, there's a lot of events going on. And what's really gratifying, I got a letter from the principal of the 8th grade school where my grandson goes in Norwalk, inviting me to come and be part of that. Well, it starts at 11 o'clock, so obviously I'll be at Vets Auditorium. But it's very gratifying to see the schools coming into context and understanding that these young people need to be exposed to this, they need to know about, they need to learn, and it was a heartbreaker to turn that one down, but I'd like to have gone. So for speaking for all of Iowa's veterans, I want to express my appreciation to Governor Branstad, Lieutenant Governor Reynolds, and all the citizens of Iowa who have supported us so richly and continue to support us as we go forward and recognize those who have served, those who fought, and as Tim said, many have died so that we can have the rights and the freedoms that we do as citizens of this wonderful country. I'll be followed by Jason Kemp, the new director of Home Base Iowa. Jason.
Good morning. First, I'd like to start off by saying thank you very much, Governor.
It's an honor for me to serve veterans in the state of Iowa in this position. As a veteran myself, I understand what the transition is like for our military members. In 2012, I retired here and had a little trouble finding a job myself. So this job is very near and dear to my heart, and it's something that I really enjoy doing. It's been a challenge, and although that I do love it. Home Base Iowa exists to help make sure that that people transitioning service members come to Iowa and have the best chance to find employment, to find good, safe communities, and to get the educational benefits that they and their family are looking for. Home Base Iowa is already a successful program, and I'm very grateful to play a part in that program. Today I want to highlight just three initiatives that that we've been working on. The first one is increasing the presence of Home Base Iowa and Iowa companies at regional on-base career fairs. I think starting out, we need to really focus on regional recruiting. So we've targeted 11 bases. There's 5 Army bases, 4 Air Force bases, and 2 naval stations that we're looking at. We've also have a new and improved website that we'll roll out in the next couple weeks. I'm finding that websites can be challenging to build, so it's a lot of fun. And the third is organizing a statewide Home Base Iowa conference to bring everything to bring all the parties together. And General Orr's offered up in the past this idea, and we're definitely excited to move forward with that. As the military continues to draw down, Iowa has a very real opportunity to bridge that the employer gap that that we have here in the state. So, and in the short time that it's been around, it's making a real difference. So the results so far, we have 24 Iowa communities that are Home Base Iowa. We have 900 businesses across the state which have pledged to hire veterans. We have 16 educational institutions that have met the criteria to become CHAMPS organizations. And the most important number of all is we've hired over 1,500 veterans to date. In the last 6 weeks since I came on board, I've had the pleasure with meeting with Iowa Workforce Development folks, Department of Education folks, Department of Veteran Affairs folks, National Guards folks, and to many companies. Glad to see Bob Myers here today, and several great communities up in Northwest Iowa. It was a good time. I look forward to working with all these people and all these organizations to move Home Base Iowa forward to the next level. It's been a whirlwind for sure, but one thing is obvious in my 6 weeks being in the seat is that Iowans really care about veterans and really care about veterans organizations and really go the extra mile to help veterans in this state, and that's very gratifying to me personally, and it's certainly gratifying to those veterans and service members who are transitioning. So in closing, I'll say our communities want to welcome them, our college and universities want to welcome them, and our businesses want to employ them. So thank you very much.
Jason, thank you very much. And I enjoyed being with Jason. We honored O'Brien County and Lyon County and Sioux County together last week. So we'd open it to questions on this subject first.
General Orr.
In chorus, here we go.
Give you some specific facts on that. We have about 19% of our Air Force, 18% of our females serve in the Air National Guard of our force. On the Iowa Air National Guard for field grade officers, which we call major and above, we have 29, and senior enlisted, which are
Can you start over?
Yes, ma'am.
18% in Iowa of the entire
of the. Of the Air National Guard in Iowa, of our force of 2,200 airmen, 18% of those are in female positions. Females. Correct.
Okay, whatever.
Yes. Service members. Generic. As you look at that population in the Air National Guard, in the field grade officer, these are majors and higher positions. 29 of those positions that we have are filled with female officers.
Total.
total females and
29
out of I'll take sorry, I don't have the exact figure, but 18% of 2,200, so that would give you roughly probably about 200, I'm guessing.
Okay.
So,
and how about
on the Army Guard side of the house, the senior enlisted, which we call our E8s and higher, non-commissioned officers, we have 9 of those. And I'm proud to say that the senior non-commissioned officer in the Iowa National Guard, my partner for overall responsibility, Command Sergeant Major Fales, is the first Command Sergeant Major female in the Iowa National Guard. I could get with you offline also. Under the Army Guard side of the house, ma'am, we have approximately 7,000. So 15% of our force under the Army National Guard are female soldiers.
What do you expect that to move to given
the changes in combat? Well, I think really the sky is the limit. There's a lot of opportunity. What this will do now is take force structure and the Iowa Guard that has always habitually been assigned to the male population and now opens up, for the most part, most of our state. So love to be able to see that double in the next few years, but it's a tremendous opportunity, especially with 100% tuition assistance that our men and women, both in the Air and Army, receive as being a member of the Iowa National Guard.
What kinds of recruitment will you be doing to try and increase
that? Well, I think it doesn't change. What it really does is when we sit down with our future recruits, we're now able to open the whole book up and be able to show them opportunities in all our units. And I think that's significant considering that we, in the past, if you lived in predominantly Northwest Iowa, that was predominantly a combat-related units, your closest units were more closer to Camp Dodge and to Eastern Iowa. This has now really made the state more accessible for our men and women to serve in the communities that they live in. Oh, I think she's one example of many. You know, recently we had 3 women that completed Ranger School, and as an Army Ranger, former, you know, Ranger School graduate myself, I think it's a great testament to our Army, and I think very proud as the Ranger Corps that we've now been able to bring females into to that field.
And do you have a goal? You said 18% of the Air Guard and 15% of the Army Guard. Do you have a goal?
No, I think it really, you know, to say that we have a goal set that that we want this percentage female male, I think our point is to sell the organization as a professional organization and allow opportunity for all. And so do I see growth? Absolutely, and especially in the combat arms units. But I'm, you know, I would decline to put a percentage on that. That's correct.
And what's the highest ranking woman?
Well, I have 2. I have 1 on the Air Guard who is my, what we would call a Deputy Adjutant General for the Air, Brigadier General Walder. She's a Brigadier General. And then on the Army side, my Command Sergeant Major, who is responsible for the scene, for all the enlisted, is a female.
I would like to add, too, the state of Iowa has benefited from the leadership of the military and the National Guard. We have a couple of retired women generals who are in key positions in this administration. Janet Phipps, who is in charge of the Department of General Service, Administrative Services, Department of Administrative Services, and Jody Timeson, who is the commandant for the Veterans Home. And then we have retired Air Force a person here in Beth Townsend who is in charge of workforce development. Now, I don't think you were a general, though, right?
Unfortunately.
Yeah, she's a lieutenant colonel, like Bob King. But the leadership that people get, both men and women, from the military, I think prepares them for other important responsibilities. And the state of Iowa is really blessed to have some women military veterans who are continuing to serve in other capacities as department heads or as I pointed out.
You know, I don't. I think they've demonstrated since the 9/11, the beginning of the war, we got several women that have become what we would say have received the Silver Star, which is next highest to the Medal of Honor. And so, you know, I think our units have served, you know, whether they were authorized to have women in the units, in many cases they were assigned to roles and responsibilities that put them in the same conditions in the same environment. And so a convoy, when it leaves the forward operating base, is usually male-female composite, depending on the type of unit. And they're under the same potential, even though they're not in a combat unit. They might be in a support unit, but have had to deal with the same type of combat environments. And they've demonstrated, you know, that we expect every soldier to do when confronted in combat. And so I think you're seeing this across the nation play out, for whether it's the Ranger School, on the first three females to see in our special forces units, to see women embedded as part of the teams that go out to help in the proper use of courtesy and care when it comes to dealing with our civilians that we're dealing with and respect for their cultures.
Do you know how Iowa's legislation
compares
to other states?
I do. From an overall perspective, and the governor mentioned our degree of service, Iowa's in the top 15 of the country for the number of men and women that serve in the military, and specifically the Iowa National Guard. In the Guard, right now, I think we're number 12th, and in the population in Iowa, for every, we would say three civilians, we have one soldier, one airman, or service member that, so very large. You know, I don't know. I have not seen the national rankings from that perspective.
Governor,
other questions? Yes.
Okay. The woman that you mentioned, said that they're keeping track of, for instance, military leave policy appropriately. Were you surprised, sad, and shocked by the auditor's review?
Well, no, I first of all, there's another woman, our state auditor, Mary Mosman, I think is doing a great job. And I think the Attorney General should go after recouping the money that was inappropriately spent on Mr. Lamb. Other questions? I don't know that there's been anything that's been done on that yet. And we are continuing to look at, making this available to those people that have the that are authorized to utilize it, but at the same time trying to prevent misuse of narcotics in our state. And that's becoming a bigger and bigger problem with what's happened in Colorado and Washington and other states. So we're continuing to look at that very carefully, and we have empathy for those people with epilepsy and want to make sure that they are able to get it, but that only those people that have epilepsy are the ones that are able to get it, and those that have the authorization from their physicians.
Governor, the Senate Democrats today are calling on Director Palmer to delay a deadline for providers to sign up with managed care organizations as part of the Medicaid privatization. Would you consider that request?
No. First of all, we've been working on this, and they know we've been working on this diligently from January. We're doing what 25 other states have already done. The whole goal here is to provide for better outcomes and to better coordinate the services that are provided, so you don't have six different providers that don't communicate with each other, prescribing things that are in conflict with each other, that sends people to the emergency rooms of hospitals. So,
separate from the argument in favor of
It's not privatization.
Okay.
That's a misnomer, and it's... Well, there's no speed to this. It's being phased in over a period of years. And we started working on this in January, so we're looking at almost a whole year. And basically, I know there are people that want to protect their funding stream and are afraid of change, but the truth is this has proven to be effective in other states at improving medical outcomes. That's what we want to do. We also think that... It is something that will make it possible for us to provide better services to people and do it at less cost.
So the providers said they're concerned because they're only just now finding out the rate structures.
Well, that was the intent from the very beginning. Remember, we went through this process, and the legislature had plenty of time to debate and consider the changes. We made this as part of our recommendations back in January. They had the entire session. At one point, Senate Democrats wanted to count $102 million worth of savings, and we finally convinced them that the $51 million estimate was a more appropriate or accurate estimate. The budget was approved by both houses of the legislature. They had an RFP. We had 11 different companies competed for that. The top four were chosen. They had a very, and I think they went through a very fair and comprehensive detailed process, and there's been an opportunity for those that objected to appeal, and that's being done, and the four that were chosen are now have signed their contracts and are now working with the providers. And remember, it's being phased in over a period of time. The administrative law judge makes a recommendation. That recommendation would go to the department director, but because the department director, Mr. Palmer, was acting as overseer for a Medicaid, I'm going to appoint a different person to be in charge of making that decision.
Well, my question is, will you go to court?
I won't go to court. The question is, will the people that didn't get the bids, will they appeal to court? That's really the question. It's not a matter of court. And listen, you know, you always have disgruntled people that are not satisfied when they didn't get it. We went through this on the RFPs with the radios and you name it. Anytime there's big money at stake and a particular bidder doesn't get it, it's not surprising they may try to go to court. But, you know, we're not going to be fearful of that, and we feel that the appropriate procedures were followed and that we should not be delayed or prevented from doing what's in the best interest of the Medicaid patients in the state of Iowa.
Are healthcare providers just crying?
Well, you know, do you remember 2013? Remember 2013, when we had our proposal for the Healthy Iowa Plan, which eventually then was compromised and we passed the Iowa Health and Wellness Plan? The providers were up in arms. It was terrible. We were afraid of this. And you know what? Today, we have more people insured than we've ever had insured. The providers are making more money than they ever had. Charity care at hospitals has gone down significantly. So the hospitals who strongly objected to that have now seen it's really worked effectively. And we believe that given the opportunity, the managed care for Medicaid has the same potential to really provide better services, increase the beneficial outcomes, and not damage the income stream for the providers. So they just need to work together with the contractors and give us an opportunity to show that this can work just as effectively as the Iowa Health and Wellness Plan has.
Thank you.
Thank you.